The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by Fulfill.io. Imagine for a minute that you had a central business brain that looked at every facet of your e-commerce operation, shipping, ordering inventory, accounting, everything to help you make better decisions, not just about growing your top line revenue, but about being profitable. If that sounds compelling, you should check out Fulfill.io. They're the only cloud ERP designed to help you efficiently and most importantly, profitably scale your eight or nine figure brand. They do that through better forecasting, smart supply chain planning, identifying operational bottlenecks that you can go in and solve to open up the full potential of your business, and also a really powerful and incredible warehouse management system for reduced misships and mispicks for better customer experience. And they're the highest rated ERP among e-commerce fuel members, not NetSuite, not Skubana, not Odoo, but Fulfill. So if you're interested in growing, but growing profitably, you'll definitely want to check them out. And you can do that at ecommercefuel.com/fulfill. The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by One-Click Upsell, the most popular, largest upsell app in the Shopify marketplace, trusted by over 11,000 users, over 1,900 of those big spending Shopify Plus stores. And they've generated over $200 million in revenue for the merchants that use them. And you may be thinking, oh, hey, Andrew, I've heard of One-Click Upsell. I know these guys, but do you really? Do you know what they've rolled out recently? They've got some cool new stuff for their pre-purchase and their post-purchase upsells. You can now select from multiple different offers to present your customers. So instead of having them just have to pick from one single thing, you can give them the option to pick from multiple upsells, which helps and has proven to increase the number of people who actually take you up on those upsells. So if you're not using upsells in your store, it's an amazingly easy, fast way to increase your average order value and your revenues. So check them out at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping seven and eight-figure e-commerce store owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today on the show, joined by one of my favorite people in E-Commerce Fuel and just in general, Dana Johnzemas. She is one of the very earliest members of E-Commerce Fuel, an incredible entrepreneur, very shrewd, very smart, the founder of PictureHangSolutions.com, HomeHealthTesting.com. For a number of years, she was our M&A kind of expert inside of E-Commerce Fuel, has a tremendous amount of experience and skill in buying businesses, especially businesses that didn't, you know, maybe weren't seeing their full potential, building them up and then selling them. Just a really impressive e-commerce career. And someone who over the last couple of years has stepped away from business, kind of sold the businesses that she owned, spent some time in, you know, what I'll call retirement. I'm not sure she calls it that, but really has taken a break, probably a permanent break, or at least a very extended one. And so many times we hear the story of people selling their business and deeply regretting it, and it was their baby and their life, and they wish they could get it back. And that's not the case with Dana. And I think it's a very refreshing counter narrative to one we often hear in the entrepreneurial world. And so I wanted to bring her on to talk about that whole experience, how she thought about selling it, what the process was like, and most importantly, what life after business is like, and you know what she loves about it, what she misses about it. So we're gonna get deep on all those things. But Dana, welcome. Good to have you on. And yeah, I'm excited for this discussion because I always love talking to you. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. Great to be back.
When did you decide to sell? And then how did you figure out you had enough? Like kind of tied together, but what was the trigger that made you said, I think I'm done. And then also on the financial side, the calculus that you did to say, okay, I think this is enough to be done. So how, if you could go into both of those.
So it was definitely the pandemic, no doubt. I mean, it was March, April. I first thought of it in May 2020. And it was after we'd spent, 2 months pretty much at home. You know, everything was going smooth in the business. We transitioned fine. And I had spent more time at home than I had ever had. And I didn't have the distractions of doing other things, filling that time. And it was the very first time in my career. And it hit me like a gut level intuition of you could be done. You could just do this for a while. And because I really enjoyed those months at home, and I'd never had it was like a practice round you know, where I just, I got to be something a little bit different. And so then I calculated, you know, what obviously I know what my business would probably be worth. And I always keep my business in the form of being ready to sell once I get to a certain point. So it wasn't like I needed a year's runway to think about selling. And I did the calculation and I went to my wife and I said, you know, if I sold, this is what we have. I think it's enough. And for me, enough meant I already knew what our what we spend without budgeting. Just, you know, I just about every 3 to 5 years I add it up. I don't do it every year. I'm not a budgeter, but I'll ask her for all of her total spent on credit card. I'll take my total spent on credit card and then, you know, whatever the rest of the household budget is and just say, that's what we spend in our normal lives. And when I sold the business, I mean, I had more than enough to spend that without earning any more money. I mean, our money doesn't even have to grow, which is wonderful.
How do you do the calculus on the return though? Do you do like a 4% rule? I know a lot of advisors are like, yeah, you can pull 4%.
I took my net worth divided by how long I think I'll live. And did that provide me the money I need to earn for the rest of my life? Our household.
So even if you were drawing it completely down, just kind of a life. Yes. Okay.
Yes. I did not add in Social Security. I didn't add in my rent income. I didn't add in investment income. And that's actually why I know it's enough in my mind. Someone would argue with that and say, I didn't account for inflation or, you know, when you have no debt, your house is paid for, you're not really actively accumulating assets at this stage of life. You can kind of skip the whole inflation argument in my mind because you're not acquiring a lot, especially if your house is paid for.
And I know you're a huge Bitcoiner, so you've got that hedge against inflation,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. Right.
I tease because data is probably safe to say you're fairly pretty risk averse person.
Very risk averse. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So to me, enough was I don't even have to grow this money and we can maintain the same standard of living we've had for a decade or more. I mean, we just don't. And that wouldn't work for everybody. If you had a different lifestyle than me, you know, maybe that wouldn't work. But if you needed like a whole bunch of new toys or new things, I actually, in all honesty, there's enough for that too, because I still do have a commercial building and I have rent income. And I actually try to get us to waste all of our rent income because I'm not a good waster of money. I don't spend frivolously. So sometimes I'm just like, why don't we just spend all the rent this month?
What's something super fun that you've done with that? Because I can relate to that as well, being like always trying to be intentional about it and careful with it. And any fun anecdotes of things that you've just been like, that you never normally would have done, but like kind of when you took your brain and disconnected it and be like, I have these extra funds. If I don't spend them, it's not like, I mean, maybe I can, well, you could definitely, you give them away and do other useful things with them, but you also could use them and have some enjoyment with them right now, given your financial position.
Yeah. Sadly,
any fun things like,
I'm trying to think if there was any, I mean, I think it's a little bit more on little stuff along the way, like nothing big. I will say that, drawing a blank on that, but I have more freedom in buying new books or, you know, things that I shop for online, things that, you know, art supplies. I have more freedom in the little bits I spend here and there. And part of that was also entering this stage of gap year or retirement, and there isn't money coming in. So I didn't want to become one of those frugal people that acts like I don't have anything. So I try to encourage myself and my wife to occasionally waste some money. But it's not on a big scale, though.
Do you have that mindset? I mean, I've heard, and I can definitely see how this would be the case. If you do sell, you have a lump sum, you're retired, even though it can generate cash, there's something psychological about not having new money come in and you know you're spending. And even if your net worth like doubles or triples or you've gotten, you know, a good chunk, just the fact that it's not being replenished at the tops for some people, I think is a psychological little shoe in there or rock in their shoe, so to speak. Did you find that was the case or not really?
It wasn't for me. And that actually shocked me because I thought it would be. I thought I would panic, you know, and I tried to just like keep the information at hand so I could like touch it and see it. But I don't think there's even been one time that it's crossed my mind. It's like, it was, that actually shocked me because I expected a little bit of a problem with that. But I think I must really believe I have enough. And even if I'm wrong, and I think a lot of times we talk about, when people talk about doing something like this, it's, and I've heard you say this before, where it's binary. Like you think you put yourself in a corner that if you do this, you can never return. You can't change your mind, you know? And for me, I think the greatest safety is I know I can buy another business if that's what I wanted to do. Unlike a founder, maybe if you retired and you, you know, had created some amazing product or service, you'd think, well, I don't know that I could do that again. I know I can buy another business, you know, and even a local business, if that's what I, if I didn't want to do online anymore, you know, I could buy some local service business if that's what I wanted to do. So I think that brings me great comfort in that I have enough, I think, anyway, but even if I didn't, I'd just buy another small business.
Yeah, I think it's easy to be very fatalistic and be like, oh, well, to be able to retire and take the gas off, or maybe shift what I either take more time away or just shift what I want to work on, that I have to have everything covered for all eternity and, right. and I'm never going to work again. But like, that's just not the case. Like it's
not.
Most people are going to be productive in one sense of another, or could be if they chose to be, right, in terms of economically. Anyway, so yeah, I think it's very easy to want, you know, you don't have to be at 100% totally, hey, if I'm, you know, in a coma for the rest of my life, I'll be provided for before you can start making decisions maybe that aren't 100% fueled by, you know, economic reasons.
And I think we back ourselves in that corner a lot with, mm-hmm. even with the question of if I sell my business, you know, and sometimes there are times earlier in my career with other businesses, I should have sold them earlier. They were worth more years before I sold them. And I should have. And I think that was also on my mind with PictureHang, was I knew my own personal track record was maybe the next few years it wouldn't grow as much because the previous two hadn't. And I might, and I was just like, you could come back. It's not, you could just try this. I think that was my mentality, was, is there a bit, there's no harm in trying. If it doesn't work, then start the whole process again, which my favorite part is buying more than selling. I love the acquisition process because I just find that so fun. So if that's my penalty box that I have to go back and do that, that's cool.
it could be way worse. Yeah.
Right. That's just not bad.
So what was, talked a lot about like, you know, kind of decision and a little bit of the catalyst, but what's life been like post sale? Give us kind of a day. What are the things that you really deeply enjoy that you have found you have time and space for that you didn't before? Yeah. In general, what's life like after sale and kind of not planning on necessarily coming back to the business world?
I think the biggest surprise for me was the kind of the mental space, because it felt like a computer reboot, you know, like all my cache and my RAM got cleared out and I had a lot more mental playground. I'm an avid reader, always have been, but I haven't probably had the mental capacity to pull at every thread. Like if I read something interesting in this book, then to read that, you know, these unrelated topics and go down these trails. And now I can. And that has been super inspiring. And I'm on different subjects. I'm doing art history. I do a lot of Eastern philosophy, meditation. So all these topics that have always interested me, but my business brain would always hijack, you know, my time or my thought process. So that openness in my head has been the biggest surprise. And that I actually do know, if I went back into business, I know to me it's an addictive thing. You know, if you're good at something, you get rewarded. You know, it's the whole cycle. You get in the virtuous cycle of the reward system and it feels good, and it would take over because that's And maybe if I do this long enough, I could go back in business and it wouldn't take over. I'd find a better balance. I think I might be able to later. But the surprise for me was just the bandwidth in my head, the bandwidth to have ideas. And I'm like, where'd that come from?
Would you have a level of I don't know if guilt is the right term, but maybe it is. Like if, like you mentioned a topic, like say art history, you wanted to really go deep on this, but then you also think, oh, I should be doing X or Y for my business. Or was there a level of just guilt or just time that you didn't have? Even if, you know, kind of that old maxim that like, you know, work will expand to fill the space you give it kind of thing. Because you had a business, you felt like your brain always needed to be on in that kind of capacity. So was that one of the things that's been removed and given you the space to explore all these other things?
Yeah. And for me, it wasn't guilt when I had a business. It was truly passion for it. I mean, that I was so excited about it that it always took over my thoughts. So, and I couldn't balance other things that, and when you're learning something new, it's harder, you know, even art history or, you know, learning an entirely new subject, you know, it's always harder in the beginning. So your confidence isn't there and it's harder to hold your attention, where in business, my mind can go there really easy because it's a playground that I'm comfortable in and I do well in. So I think it was more like a habitual, a little bit of an addict brain. I mean, just where it's just, I got my dopamine fixes in business and that's where I like to stay. And so that makes it scary too, then if you leave. But that was the surprise, was when you took that out of my brain was really happy to play in other subjects, like really happy. So that I didn't foresee that.
What do you miss most from your entrepreneurial life? I'm sure there's some things that you do miss. What are those and how are you trying to supplement for those?
Productivity. I was, you know, a productivity junkie in that I really love the feeling at the end of the day of getting it all done, or, you know, tackling the big project, or, you know, whatever it may be, even if it's all the little projects, but getting all the way through them all and finishing it. I will say the beginning of my gap year, productivity was my hardest thing because there was no, I mean, what was I going to be productive at, you know? So I actually had to, for a while, keep a little journal of the things I did every day, because I would get to the end of the day and I'd be like, I don't have anything to show for my time. So I had to learn that. I had to learn how to figure that out for myself of what, you know, what's going to feel good? What's going to be my own reward system? And that was hard. That was the hardest part, I think. One of the hardest parts. And you know how you can, even on a bad day at work, you can like just do task and still feel good about it. You might be like, yeah, I'm not into it today, but I can get something done. But when you have just a low energy day and you have no business to funnel some of that into, it can feel lazy. I mean, I actually have more guilt. I don't think I had very much guilt when I was in business. I have more guilt now that I'm retired, because I'm like, what are you doing? What do you have to say for yourself? You know, and that takes some unwinding. I mean, you got to figure that out.
Yeah. So what have you been pouring your time into? I know a few things, but what do you spend? What has replaced business for you in your life?
So reading new subjects, doing art, more time meditating, gardening. I love gardening. And, you know, I had outsourced a lot, not the meditating. I had outsourced my gardening, you know, when I was busy in business, because it didn't make sense to be home weeding the garden. But I really like weeding the garden. I really enjoy that. And it's time consuming, you know. But so here's the hard thing about it. This is the second hardest thing about retirement, is when people say, what are you doing with your time? You really don't have a good answer. And that's kind of crappy. I mean, some people do. Probably the people who are hard charging and come in retirement and try to tackle it like a business. And I kind of entered it with this idea that I'm going to just sit in this uncomfortable space and see what happens. And it makes it not very reportable. You know, everyday ordinary stuff is what I do.
So when people ask you what you do, do you say I'm retired? Do you say, do you kind of get into the details of the day? What, and is that a hard question? Because I think like-
It is a hard question.
As a store owner, it's a hard question, right? Because like it's, you know, I could be like, oh, I've been doing this for 15 years and I still feel like I'm maybe a little better at explaining what I do to people, but not great. And, you know, and I think most niche store owners or entrepreneurs online would be able to relate to this to some degree. So, but I'm in your shoes, I imagine it's also challenging sometimes.
And it depends on the audience because, you know, I can go to a local event here and see other retired people and they say, what do you do? And you can say retired. I can go to e-commerce fuel event live and I better come up with a better story, you know, because it is hard. I think that's, and that goes back to your identity. You know, we suit up over 30 years of being in business and put on the armor and, you know, all the identity of being an entrepreneur. And that's a long time. And then to just stop, you have to decide, well, what I'm trying to have no identity. And that's really hard because I don't know what it is. And that's, and I'm okay with that. Does that make sense? It sounds like I'm losing my marbles though, if I say it out loud, but I'm not, that's where I'm trying to sit in it and just figure it out. And I still can say I haven't figured it all the way out. Like I know I'm not going to do what I'm doing right now for the rest of my life. I'm going to do something that has some meaning and productivity. I don't think it'll be business, but I'm not sure what it'll be, but I'm going to find it. It might just be that I'm an artist, which would be fine, but I think there's even going to be more than that. And I don't know if it's going to be social entrepreneurship or nonprofit work or what, but there's going to be another version. It's just, I haven't decided what it is yet. And I think after a long career, you're okay floating for a while.
Hey, Andrew here with a little aside. If you're listening, you're obviously interested in e-commerce. And so I want to make sure you know about our private community for 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brands at e-commerce fuel. And the secret sauce, like you might guess, is it's limited to people who own stores, who are in the trenches, practitioners doing this stuff. It's a very curated community, which has three big benefits. First, it means everyone inside can help get fast on-point answers to your most important questions. If you're trying to decide if SMS is a tool worth rolling out, if you just got suspended on Amazon, if you're trying to hire a director of e-commerce, these are all things that either people have experience with or have gone through in the forums. And if you post and ask questions, you'll get answers within hours, sometimes even minutes, as well as being able to tap into close to a decade of archived discussions. So you get a lot of insights, fast answers to pressing questions. You get to plug into an amazing network of over 1,100 experienced e-commerce entrepreneurs. So you can reach out to people if you're in e-commerce fuel. Our members are incredibly giving and generous. And so if you want to reach out to someone with expertise, oftentimes we'd be happy to share what they know. If you're, you know, traveling, hopefully when traveling is a common thing again, a lot of our members would hit in the city, you know, DC, Dallas, Sydney, Australia, you know, London, wherever it is, and be able to have someone on the ground you can connect with or maybe grab a beer with. It's an amazing network. And then finally, we've got a huge user-generated review library with over 10,000 reviews on agencies, software, e-commerce software that you can tap into to avoid costly hiring and software mistakes. Nothing is worse than spending 3 months with an agency to onboard only to find out that a bunch of people already tried them and they were horrible and they wasted a bunch of your money and your life. So those are the kind of things you can avoid tapping into the unbiased reviews and experiences of our members with our software directory. So if any of this sounds interesting to you, you should join us at ecommercefuel.com. You can learn more. You can apply for membership there. We also have a 5x ROI guarantee. If you own a 7- or 8-figure brand and your membership fees for our community don't pay for themselves at least 5 times over the course of the first year, we'll refund it completely as well as send you $1,000 just for the wasted time. So ecommercefuel.com, check it out. We'd love to have you apply and potentially join the community. All right. Back to the discussion.
What about personal connections, other entrepreneurs, the social connections that come with entrepreneurship? Because that's a huge component as well. So how was that for you as you moved from kind of work into a different space?
Yeah, that was hard. Even my staff at the office, because I liked everyone I worked with, and then to stop going to just see them. You know, I miss them, but my entrepreneur, my other, you know, e-commerce folks, my mastermind, and then, you know, when I attend the live events and the people I know, that was really hard. And I sat out for a bit and then I came back this year because it was too painful. I wanted those relationships. I didn't want them to wither. And I'd kind of found a way, I tried to leave my mastermind, and my mastermind is all on Slack. So we don't talk or meet. It's just a Slack group that's ongoing. I didn't think they would be honest with me if I asked them if I could stay. So I left the group. You know, you can just disconnect from a group in Slack. So I just disconnected. I wrote them a really nice note and then I disconnected. And they all emailed me and they're like, "What the heck? What are you doing?" And I'm like, I'm not going to be keeping up. It's not, you don't need me here. And so they let me be for about 2 weeks. And then they sent me a list of all the reasons I had to come back. And I was so happy because I missed them. I mean, that was a daily part of my life to know what was going on in their worlds. So I am back in that group and I'm happy to be. I mean, I'm not in there as much as I used to be, but I still catch up with them all the time.
You can't untangle the two. Like, I think about so many friendships I have through business or e-commerce fuel or yeah. And it's just, they're very intermingled. What things don't you care about? Like, what are things that you think about now that you used to stress out about a lot or think about a lot that, like, now that you don't necessarily have a business and your focus is on other things, that you don't care at all about, and you're kind of surprised that it took up so much mental space before? Are there some things that you see on occasion like, "Oh yeah, I used to worry about it all the time and I was kind of ridiculous for giving it that much attention"?
Advertising. I don't miss advertising at all. Managing ad budgets and advertising, I do not miss one iota at all. When I see, you know, even like in the forum, and I see, you know, something's happening with Facebook or something's happening with, you know, any of the platforms, I don't miss that at all. That feeling that, you know, everything could crash with one change. But that's just the risk of business. But managing your ads and your ad budget, even when I would source it out, it still just was like, it was a big component of online business. And I guess it really wasn't the part I liked the most. Like, I like strategy, but that was somewhere between strategy and execution that I didn't care for. So I don't miss that.
How do you think about investing the money that you have now? A couple caveats. I know you're very risk adverse. I know you mentioned kind of during your gap year before you kind of decided, hey, this is going to be more permanent, or at least adopted the retirement label. How do you think about, do you have it all in, do you just put it in low cost index funds? Do you still keep it in primarily in just savings accounts given risk tolerances? Like, how do you think about, or do you just not even worry about it and kind of keep it super low risk so you don't have to worry about it from a mental space?
I do keep it super low risk. I've been obviously thrilled with the interest rate changes because that was huge. So I've gotten like a 4x raise for doing nothing over the last few months. So I do money markets, and I've finally gotten into, based on somebody talking about it in the forum, I didn't know about brokered CDs, and I just think they're just amazing. So now I have brokered CDs through Vanguard and Fidelity, and I've started doing treasuries as well. So now I'm super, super low risk. I mean, I have money. I have my retirement, my simple IRA in the stock market. It's, you know, but that the bulk though of my money is super just CDs, money markets, treasuries.
When you say brokered CDs, can you talk about what that means a little bit more? What's the difference between a brokered CD and just a regular CD, which I think most people are familiar with?
You can buy them through a brokerage and you don't have to open an account at the bank, which is awesome. So if you're worried about having money over the FDIC limit and you split your money into multiple banks and you have to manage all those bank accounts, that feels a little fraught with, you know, risk as well, because you've got multiple accounts. And so a brokered CD, you can buy from different banks through Vanguard or Fidelity and still get the bank's FDIC insurance. So you can have four different $500,000 brokered CDs all through Vanguard, and not have four different bank accounts. But you have FDIC insurance on each of them, and you can do short-term ones, 3 month, 6 month, 12 month. And most of the time, they're rates that the bank is not paying at their bank. So you know how like Wells Fargo is just famous for, you know, super low rates on everything in the bank.
Super low everything.
But you'll see brokers. Yeah. You'll see brokered CDs through Vanguard with Wells Fargo when they need to raise cash or deposits for going rates for 4.5%, 4.8%, 5%. So I learned all of that in the forum because there's just great threads on how do you manage this and that. And people are so kind and helpful and do little videos for you so you can figure out how to do it. So that's been... and I just started doing that this year because I'm out of my gap year and I actually really didn't want to think about it during my gap year. So I wasn't doing any investigating of different things. I just put it all in money markets and let it be. But with the rising rates, it's definitely worth, you know, doing something different because you're looking at 1 to 2% higher. Like most money markets are paying 3, but these brokered CDs and treasuries are closer to 5. That's a big difference.
Yeah, it's a big difference. And one thing that was, I mean, you reached out to me about coming to ECF Live this last year, and so glad you did. And it kind of came under a new program that you helped inspire and create, which is called the ECF Alumni Program. And with the idea being that we've got members like yourself, and increasingly you're going to continue to have more and more as we just continue to grow and the community gets more mature, that have been in business. They have a lot of meaningful, deep experience, have moved on to a different new chapter, but still want to stay connected to friends that they've made in the community, but also have a lot to offer, especially other entrepreneurs. Maybe not on, you know, the most recent update to Facebook or TikTok or whatever it is, but there's so many things in business from a leadership perspective, from a judgment perspective, from a risk tolerance perspective, so many things that are evergreen that you can really help other people. It was cool. It was amazing having you there this year because this alumni program for members like yourself, we're going to be having members that have a lot of those attributes, and especially that have been plugged into the community for a meaningful amount of time and contributed a lot like you have. You've been phenomenal. They can be in the community. They can come to some of the events and still kind of be that, yeah, just be a real bastion of wisdom for a lot of the other members, which I think is super cool. So thank you for the idea for that. And thank you for being willing to stick around. And
well, thank you for letting me come back. I felt kind of odd, like my hat in my hand to say, is there any chance? But I kept looking at the checkout on the live event and I was like, man, that spouse ticket looks really good. You know, I just want to go to breakfast and I want to go to the parties. And I didn't want to take a seat from somebody who was growing their business to be in the sessions during the day. So I appreciate your openness to even consider it. I don't like being the exception and saying, can you do something for me? But I wanted to come that bad. So I did.
You've been and excited to have you for years, hopefully in the future.
But I know there's going to be more of these conversations because there's people, you know, a few years behind me that are going to be thinking, well, what's it like? What's it like to try this retirement thing? What's it like to exit? How do you know when it's enough? And those are always the rich conversations we have at the live events because you might not type it in the forum, you know? But that's the kind of conversations we have is something that's whatever's on your mind and you find the person that's done it. That's the beauty of the group you created.
If you're in e-commerce fuel and you're listening and you're kind of coming into a similar or maybe coming into a similar chapter of your life, reach out to myself or Patrick and let us know because we are building up an alumni program for members just like Dana who have been in the community for a while, have meaningfully connected and contributed and would like to stick around post business and are also willing to be able to chime in and maybe help, you know, help mentor or connect with other members as well that could use their advice from time to time. So let us know. And it's something we're going to be building on in the future. So Dana, last question for you before we get into our lightning round here. Let's say, imagine there's someone listening and almost certainly there is who maybe they're not quite ready for retirement, but they're also feeling like, man, I feel like I've let business take over too much of maybe my mental space, of my health, of my family life. Because like our whole tagline here, and this is important to me, is like helping entrepreneurs build amazing businesses and incredible lives. And like, I think we over-index on the business side too much so often. So you've been on the other side where you've been completely, you know, business has not been part of the equation. What are maybe couple ways you could answer it. What are maybe one or two of the richest things that you have enjoyed on the other side of that, that you wish you could have brought over to your business side? Or maybe a different way to answer it is how, like, what advice would you give them if they don't want to full on sell or and retire, or maybe, you know, very, very likely chance they can't sell and retire at the moment. Any way you can try to get as much of the best of both worlds as you can from your perspective? Any thoughts?
I think if I could go back in time and try to advise myself, I would have said, let some of it go. Don't be so productive. Don't feel the need to always trying to be your best at everything. I think I've gotten, you know, because I'm not doing things that I'm great at right now, which is good. And that's good for your soul. And I think we get to a place in business, or I think in any career, you probably get there if you've climbed, you know, a ladder of in a corporate world or anything, you get to a point where you keep working in your same strengths and your wheelhouse. And that's good. And that's honestly, that's what I told myself to do, and that I would make more progress doing that. The problem with it is you lose some level of excitement. You lose the messy place of sitting there not knowing what to do, learning something new. And that's really invigorating. And I think I'd lost some of that. And that if I could go back and tell myself, I would be like, just do some of your hobbies that you really suck at and don't not do those and pull the weeds in your garden because that's what you like to do. And that last 10% that you're being so freaking productive, just don't. It wouldn't have mattered, you know? And I think if I could go back, that's what I would try to tell myself is just give yourself some slack. You're going to get there, you know? That would be my advice. Just give yourself some slack. It's just not, everything's not that important.
That's really good advice. One thing I've noticed is, you know, building still very much building a business, having a family with three kids, like, and doing all the things we try to do, like on any given week, if I'm lucky, I'll have maybe 5 hours of free time, maybe if I'm lucky. Right. So, and I thought about this and some of the days where if I clock out and end by 4 o'clock and go and get an extra hour, hour and a half with a family or friends, whatever it is, if you do that, you know, that's 1 hour, but that's like a 20% boost in your free time for the week for 1 hour, right? You double that. If you do that every day, you double the free time you have in a week with 5 hours. So anyway, I've been thinking more about that in terms of sometimes very small changes in terms of stepping away just a little bit earlier can have, in absolute terms, they're small, but in relative terms of how much space you have to do other things, they can be a massive increase, which I think is kind of cool.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think if you can add 30 minutes a day, or an hour a day, that's huge. That's really huge. And there's a great quote that I keep on my bulletin board by Gretchen Rubin, who wrote The Happiness Project, and it's what you do every day, not what you do once in a while, that contributes to your happiness. And it's true. We think it's like the big trip or the big, you know, milestone in business when you get over this level or when you sell, and you think it's all those things, but really what it is that every day. It's the everyday stuff that brings us meaning, fulfillment, and happiness.
Dana, would love to cap this off with a lightning round. So I think you know how it goes. I'm going to fire a handful of questions at you and get your thoughts. So feel free to be punchy and just super short with them. But first question, I usually ask, how would you describe the e-commerce environment right now in 1 to 3 words? I'm going to say, how would you describe the retirement environment right now in 1 to 3 words?
Reflective, mindful, and open.
What's one of your fondest memories from your childhood?
Waiting for my dad to come home from work. I would walk to the corner and sit on the drain pipe or whatever at the corner there, and his little car would come around the corner and pick me up. I love that.
You live in North Carolina right now. If you weren't living in Wilmington, where would you live?
Probably somewhere in the Southeast, maybe not on the coast. I guess I'll throw out Greenville, South Carolina, but I've never even been there. But it's on my list to maybe go look at. So I would probably stay in this region, but get off the coast.
What's your favorite painting that you did recently?
I've done an encaustic painting, which is a wax painting of some bluebirds. That's probably one that I'm most proud of as far as it's displayed in the house. But I do a lot of collage work. I'm looking over at one, sorry, of book covers, and I take vintage book covers and cut them up and make these the collages out of them. And I did one on that's titled Time Flies, and it's my favorite piece I've done.
What was the hardest business you ever ran? I mean, you've owned numerous businesses over the years, done a lot of different things. What was the hardest one you've ever run?
SiteClean. I had a business. It was my first startup, and it was a construction debris recycling company. So I had dump trucks and bobcats, and we picked up all the waste on a new home construction and then recycled as much of it as we could. I only owned it for about 3 years, and I sold it because I really, really despised it.
What is it do you think makes you so risk adverse? I mean, I'm very similar that way. We joke about that a lot. What is it that, you know, makes you more risk adverse than more be risk prone?
Early on, it was because I had no safety net whatsoever. So I didn't have family support, and I didn't have, I had zero safety net, as in I was near bankruptcy a good part of my early, like in my 20s and stuff, and I just had no support system. So that was originally why I was risk averse. And so I thought that I would get away from that when I became successful. I thought, wow, when I have money, I'm going to really be able to, you know, do all these things because I can buy multiple businesses and do all these things. But then the opposite happened, and I enjoyed the security. I found it so nice to have the security that I couldn't imagine risking what I had for something I didn't have. So, and that is kind of how I still look at it. Like if I really have to want something a lot to risk something I already have to trade it for something I don't have. And most of the time, for most things, I can talk myself out of it because I'm like, you don't need that business. What's that going to do for you? You know, so I've become more risk averse as I've had more that I could risk, which was a surprise to myself.
That's interesting. I heard somebody say something, maybe it was Ramit Sethi, something along the lines of people's attitudes about money or willingness to spend money or how much they think they have has almost zero correlation with how much money they actually have. Like I think about, like my grandmother, she grew up in the Depression. And I think actually her father actually owned a bank that went under in the Great Depression and like a very hard time for her growing up and her family. And, you know, as she, you know, in her last few years, like she was very comfortable, but still like checked the stocks every day, was very thrifty. And which is, there's, you know, a lot of value in thrift, but it's also, man, it is hard to change your thoughts around money. I don't want to say impossible, but it's amazingly how powerful they are, the life experiences that you have in terms of how they shape the way you think about money.
And I think if anybody thinks if they think they want to try selling their business and living without an income, whether you call it retirement or not, you really need to work on your money attitudes beforehand because it will. And I have always been fascinated by that subject. Like money and happiness are two subjects that I've read a lot over my whole life. And so I feel like I probably dealt with some of those demons earlier. But if you never have like really thought about how money makes you feel, then you might want to tackle that subject before you enter retirement because it can mess with you. And I feel like because I really had studied that a lot, and you know, my favorite book is that Psychology of Money by Morgan Housel. I just love that book because he just spells it out. Like he calls it what it is and makes you think about these subjects. And that one could trip a lot of people up in retirement, I think.
You introduced me to that book. Phenomenal book. I've recommended it a lot on the show in the past. If you have not read it, I studied finance in school, kind of a finance geek. I love it. And I've read a lot of finance books. It's the best finance book I think I have ever read. And not because it's like very academic, but because it's so approachable. And one of the things he talked about in there that I thought was so true, he's like, there are almost no careers across any field where you could say an amateur could beat the professional just based on their mindset or their, you know, their behaviors, you know, professional sports, architecture, oil drilling, whatever it is, you know. But if you look at personal finance, it happens all the time where people that just are amateurs based on just their habits and their mindset are able to win against the professionals. I thought that was so cool.
And I feel like that book is really good for entrepreneurs too, because it's, even though it's not tactical on the finance, it's all about mindset. And I think so many subjects he covered in there really are how we feel about our businesses, because he talks about enough a lot. He talks about risk and, you know, what are you risking things for? And I think a lot of that applies to business.
Yeah. Phenomenal read. I can't recommend it enough. Last question, Dana, who's an interesting and notable person you have met through e-commerce fuel? This is not the most interesting, notable, or the most notable person, but just someone that when you think of an interesting, notable person comes to mind for whatever reason that you've met, either the forums or events or...
Lars Hundley. Yes. I met him at the very first e-commerce fuel in Austin, Texas. And this is really funny. I had from the beginning, from years before I met him, I had an article that he was in Inc. magazine, and it had a full page picture of him. I had it in one of my files. When I met him, I went home and I took a picture of it and I emailed it to him. I was like, just so you know, I had this article from like 6 years prior to that, of him with a little reel mower in Inc. magazine. So he, believe it or not, to me, at that first event, it was like meeting a celebrity, because he was in Inc. magazine, and that felt celebrity-like to me.
That's awesome. That's really, so you had, that's amazing. You met him for the first, what made you tuck away that little article? Would you just remember it, or what was it that made you?
Because I can remember it clear as day. I was on a plane going somewhere and I had my Inc. magazine with me and I was looking for a business for sale. I was in the market for a business and I hadn't really thought of e-commerce because it was so new. And his story, they talked about how he was doing it. It was just a great little story. And I was just like, no, that's cool. That's really cool. And that was in the days when everything wasn't on the internet and you actually tore the magazine out and kept it. You know what I mean? Probably Inc. magazine wasn't even on the internet at that time.
That's amazing. I had no idea. I mean, I've known both of you for a decade now, but I had no idea that's the origin story of how you met. That's really cool. Well, Dana, thank you so much for coming on to talk about this. It's something that doesn't get really talked about a whole lot, or if it does, I think it's a few people are talking about it from the level of experience that you have. So congrats on an amazing entrepreneurial career. Thank you for being in the community and such an amazing resource and contributor and friend, and congrats on a very cool retirement / gap year / extended painting extravaganza, whatever you want to define it. But so cool having you on, and looking forward to seeing you. We're going to be in the same place in Florida here in a few weeks here for Seller Summit. So looking forward to hanging out, and thank you for coming on.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. And thanks for a great community that I've been thrilled to be part of for the last decade.
Thanks. It's been amazing having you. So appreciate it.
Given you've made it to the end of the episode, there's a pretty good chance you're fairly serious about this e-commerce stuff, which is why you should check out the e-commerce fuel community. It's a vetted, vibrant community for 7- and 8-figure brand owners. And joining gives you access to a lively discussion forum for experienced founders sharing insights and getting help, access to our library of over 20,000 member reviews on everything from agencies to tech to lawyers to all the things that, you know, founders are making hiring decisions or purchasing decisions on to run their business, and invites to member events throughout the year. So if that sounds interesting, you can apply for membership and learn more at ecommercefuel.com. Big thanks to One-Click Upsell from Zipify Apps. Rapidly increase your AOV by offering targeted high-converting upsells. You can get started with them at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. And also to Fulfill.io, an ERP designed specifically to streamline complex e-commerce businesses and the highest rated ERP among our community members. Learn more at ecommercefuel.com/fulfill. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard, adventure often, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
This is the ASY Radio Network, live from New York.